the paragraph of Baruch Shomer Haftachas Olam Yisrael Baruch Hu, that Hashem keeps His promise to the Jewish people. The Mepharshim explained, the Ritva explains, Hashem kept His promise to bring us out of Mitzrayim. That was the Haftacha, to take us out of Mitzrayim. And not only that, Hashem went further and he bumped it up a little and He brought us out early. Hashem was like waiting to, He wanted to fulfill that promise to bring us out early, to bring us out of Mitzrayim. So He even brought us out early. That's what the Ritva says. That's Pshat Baruch Shomer Haftachas Olam Yisrael Baruch Hu. Okay. So it says Hashem was chishev esaketz. That means Hashem calculated the end. So the Shibbutz Halakhah, one of the Rishonim, and others say that this means as follows: that the gematria of Kates Kuf Tzadi is 190. So Hashem calculated the end, meaning we were supposed to be in Mitzrayim 400 years. We were supposed to be enslaved for 400 years, and in the end we were only enslaved for 210 years. What's the pshat? So the answer is Hashem calculated it. Hashem figured out the. He calculated it, meaning that because the Shibud was so oppressive, because the Mitzrayim were so evil to Bnei Yisrael and treated us so poorly, that the amount or the level of oppression that we had in 210 years equaled what we deserved for 400 years. The level of oppression that we had for 210 years equaled that which we deserved for the 400 years. So Hashem was chishev esaketz. Hashem worked it out and He figured out that after 210 years, it's time to leave already. And therefore, the gematria of 190, the last 190 years were left out because Hashem, calculated the cheshbon and worked out that we were already ready to leave, deserved to leave after 210 years. Now, there's a very beautiful vort of the Vilna Gaon on this idea that Hashem shortened our stay in Mitzrayim by 190 years. Why? Because the Mitzrayim were so oppressive and treated us so bitterly, therefore Hashem shortened the amount of time we were in Mitzrayim. And the Gemara goes as follows. What we're going to do now is a gematria that the Gemara had a yesod. The Gemara, the Vilna Gaon, took it as axiomatic that any idea found in Chazal is already hinted at in Torah Shebichsav. Any idea found in Chazal, in the Medrash, is hinted at somewhere in Torah Shebichsav. You just have to find it. So the Gemara, for the last several years of his life, spent most of his time learning Chumash, because he was searching the Torah Shebichsav for these hints, for these remazim, for things found in Torah Shebichsav. There's a whole list of these vorts, these remazim that the Gemara found for Torah Shebichsav already in the Torah Shebichsav. So as part of those remazim, once in a while, the Gemara uses gematrias. And when the Gemara uses a gematria, so it's a real remez. There are two types of gematrias. One type of gematria is as follows. You're at a Sheva Brachos and someone says, oh, the Chassan's name is whatever, and the gematria of the Chassan's name is exactly the same as the Kala has an aunt who once taught third grade, and one of her students had a brother, and the brother's name is the same gematria as the Chassan's. Oh, so they're a perfect match. That's a joke. It's silly. It's not a real gematria. Fine. But sometimes you have gematrias where through the gematria you find a real remnant to something significant in Chazal. That's the Gemara. The Gemara's gematrias were of that nature. So here's what the Gemara says. The Chazal say that because of the bitterness and the difficulty of the Shibud, of the oppression, Hashem shortened our stay in Mitzrayim. What is the pasuk which describes the bitterness of the Shibud? Vayimaruru es chayehem. In Perek Aleph of Shmos, Vayimaruru es chayehem. And the Mitzrayim made our lives bitter. Okay. Now the Gemara pointed out as follows. The trup. The trup means the nigunim, the notes. The notes on the phrase Vayimaruru es chayehem is a kadma ve'azla. That's the name that we give to those notes. It's you read it Vayimaru es chayehem. That's called a kadma ve'azla. That's how you read. When a person reads from the Torah, so there's a way to read. There are rules and regulations. Not rules. There are notes how to read from the Torah. So we use the note. So the name of this note is Kadma V'Azla. It's spelled out Kuf Dalet Mem Aleph, Kadma, V'Azla, Vav Aleph, Zion Lamed Aleph. Vav Aleph, Zion Lamed Aleph. So the Gemara pointed out that the name, Kadma V'Azla, the name, means to go early. Kadma means early, Kodem early, and Azla means to go. And the root, Zion Lamed, in Aramaic means to go. It means to go. So it's beautiful. The Gemara said, yeah, to go early. Because our lives were so bitter in Mitzrayim, because the oppression was, because the Shibud was so oppressive, we taka left early. So as a remnant to the fact that we left Mitzrayim early, because the Shibud was so difficult, the name of the truck on the phrase, Vayimaru Eschayehem, is Ekadma V'Azla. That's a very nice Gemara. But then the Gemara goes further. And the Gemara points out that the exact gematria of Kadma V'Azla is 190. Exactly. Add up a kuf and a dalet and a mem and an aleph and a vav, aleph, zion, lamed, aleph. It's exactly 190. So it works out beautifully that on the phrase Vayimaru Eschayehem, which is the makor and which is the source of the idea that we left Mitzrayim early because our lives were so bitter, the notes on that phrase are a direct remez for leaving early, 190. That we left 190 years early. That's one of the many vorts that the Gra has where he discovered hints in the Chumash, hints in Torah Shebichsav, for ideas that for ideas that are found in Torah Sheba'al Peh. So that's the word of the Gra, and that's on this phrase here, where it says here, Hashem was chishei v'saketz, and he brought us out 190 years early. So that's the word of the Gra on that idea. Okay, next there's in this haftacha that Hashem gives to Avram, it says Yadoa teida ki yeri yazarach beretz olahem, etc., and it says, and the goy, that means the Mitzrim, that they enslave you, don, I will judge them. Don anochi, I will judge them. That's what the pasuk means, I will judge them. Hashem's going to punish them fine. So it's interesting, the word don is striking, because the future tense of judge is adun. So it really, the Torah really should have said, Hagoy asher avodu adun anochi, I will judge them. The verb done is not the standard way to say I will judge in future tense. What's the pshat in the word done? So the Rav Zatzal quotes from Chaim Soloveitchik a beautiful pshat in what done means, and the Rav himself developed that theme. He developed it further. So it goes as follows. Rav Chaim said as follows. You find two midrashim regarding Hashem and the Goyim. Hashem judging the Goyim. In one midrash it says Hashem's going to be sitting when the Goyim are judged. Another Midrash says Hashem's going to be standing. Two Midrashim. What's Pshat in the Midrashim? So Chaim said as follows. When you have a court case, the Dayan sits and the litigants, the Baal Eidin, stand. That's Halacha. They stand and the judges sit. So Chaim said as follows. The Midrash is teaching us that when Hashem judges the Goyim, he's not just going to be the judge. He's also going to be the Baal Din. He's also going to be the litigant who makes the claims on behalf of Klal Yisrael as well. In other words, when you have a court case, the two guys fight it out. The two litigants, they fight back and forth. That's called done. They're fighting. Done. Done means like a fight, a discussion back and forth. So Hashem's going to be not just the judge who judges the Goyim. He's also going to, in a sense, be our lawyer. He's going to make the claims for us. Done. He's going to fight with the Goyim and say, no, that's wrong, that's not true. And he's going to go fight with back and forth. That's the pshat done anochli, and that's pshat in the Medrash. Hashem's going to be standing as a Baal Din and sitting as a judge. That's what our client said. Hashem's going to be the prosecuting attorney. He's going to be the judge. And of course, Hashem's going to be the one who meets out the punishment. Our client said that's the pshat in the tefillah that we say in the Alei Nisim. We say Hashem is Rafta es Rivam, Danta es Dinam, Lekamta es Nikmasam. Rafta means to fight. Hashem's going to be the prosecuting attorney. He's going to fight with the Goyim back and forth about the claims that they make. Danta, past tense there, means judge. Hashem's going to judge the Goyim. And the context Nikosam, he's going to mete out the punishment. Hashem's going to be the prosecuting attorney, the judge, and the one who meets out the punishment as well. That's a beautiful pshat in Raf Es Rivam, Danto Es Dinam, Nekantas Nikmasam. Okay, that's what Reb Chaim said. So the Rav just added on to that in the following way. Why should this be so? Why should it be so that Hashem has to be the prosecuting attorney? Why can't we prosecute for ourselves? It'll be the Yom HaDin. Hashem will be judging the Goyim over there. Why can't the Jews appoint their own lawyers? We'll find historians, and we'll find rabbinic leaders who are historians, and they'll find out all the cases where the Goyim did bad things to us, and we'll deal with the Goyim that way. Why does Hashem have to be the Baal Din as well? So the Rabbi gave two pshatim on this, both very good. One pshat he gives is based on the Kuzari. The Kuzari points out that when the Goyim attack B'nai Yisrael and they're going through anti-Semitism, we believe deep down they were coming to attack Hashem. B'nai Yisrael represents Hashem in this world. We are like the conscious of the world. The Gemara says that when Har Sinai is called Sinai because Sinai Yardo Olam, when the Torah came down, it brought hatred. The Jews, the Goyim, hate the Jews because we're the Am Torah. We represent Hashem, and they feel guilty about the fact. This is deep down; they don't recognize it. Deep down, they feel guilty about that. And they lash out at the Jewish people, the Kuzari explains, as a way of getting at us, because we like to make them feel guilty, we're the conscience of the world. So in a sense, when the Goyim have persecuted us for so many generations, really they're attacking Hashem. Hashem's the Baal Din, so he's the one fighting them. So it makes sense that he's going to be the one who's going to make the claims, because it's not, he's the real litigant in the court case. It's Hashem fighting the Goyim. That's one shot why Hashem's going to be the Baal Din, not just the judge. But the Rav gave another pshat, a very beautiful pshat as well, based on taininon. Taininon means that if a person can't make a claim for himself, we make the claim for him. There are certain cases in halacha. If let's say a child comes to court and he's not aware of certain things, he can't make a claim. We'll make certain claims for the child. That's called taininon. If the litigant can't claim himself, we claim for him. So the Rav explained that the B'nai Yisrael themselves can't be their own prosecuting attorney because they don't even know all the things the Goyim did to us. This in two ways. Number one, there are so many things they've done, so many persecutions, so many oppressions, we've lost track. And the only Hashem actually has an exact record of how many times they killed us and how many times they attacked us. So just because of taininon, Hashem has to present the claims himself, because we don't know the full extent of the rishus, and therefore we need help in making the claim. And that's why Hashem is going to be the one helping us make the claim, because by taininon. The second shot along these lines is that there are many things the Goyim have done to us that we're not even aware of. The Goyim may have planned to persecute us and planned to oppress us, and Hashem foiled their plans before it came to fruition. All those types of cases, those are also against the Goyim. They tried to kill us. They wanted to kill us, but it didn't work out. They also deserve punishment for that. We don't even know those things. We don't even know half things. How many times have the Goyim tried to hurt us and we were saved? We don't even know that they were trying to attack us. So in that sense, only Hashem knows the true extent of the Goyim's arishas. I have a Rebbe in Shalavim. His name is Rav Serebnik Shlita, a big tzaddik. So in Shalavim, they celebrate Yom Yerushalayim. And the day before Yom Yerushalayim, they celebrate Yom Shalavim. Why? Because during the Six-Day War in Shalavim, they discovered that the Jordanians had plans, detailed plans, how to go wipe out Shalavim house by house. Shalavim used to be on the border. How to wipe out Shalavim house by house. Detailed plans. So when we won during the Six-Day War, we discovered those plans. We realized, oh my gosh, the Goyim were planning on wiping us out house by house. Therefore, in Shalavim, they thank Hashem. Hashem, you saved Shalavim by giving us a six-day war to make a Yom Shalavim. That's a classic example. We wouldn't have known about it. If it wasn't for that we discovered the plans, we wouldn't have known about it. So the planned attacks, which were foiled, are also part of the claim against the Goyim, and that's why Hashem has to be the Baal Din as well. Rav Serebnik brought two psukim which fit with this idea. During in Sher Malos, we say Tigdol Hashem Lasos Im Eile. We say Azrim Mu Vagoyim Tigdol Hashem Lasos Im Eile Tigdol Hashem Lasos Siman Hayim Lusamechem. If you read Sher Malos, who's going to praise first? The Goyim. First, the Goyim will praise Hashem. Then we're going to praise Hashem. The implication is somehow that the Goyim will have more to praise Hashem about. Why are they going to go first? Why are they going to go first? It's a very interesting pasuk. Rav Suevnik said the pshat is that b'Yimos HaMashiach, the Goyim will have, in one sense, a greater recognition of the greatness of Hashem. Because we only know the times that Hashem saved us from their attacks. The Goyim know all the times that Hashem saved us from the planned attacks that we never even found out about. So in that sense, they're going to praise, that's a good shot in Sher Malos. They're going to praise us first because they have more to praise Hashem about, because once the Goyim recognize the truth and do tshuva, and that truth, they're going to more to praise Hashem about. Same thing in Hallel. Halu es Hashem kol Goyim, shabchu kol ha'amim, tigvar aleinu chasdo. The Goyim are going to praise Hashem because Hashem does chesed for us. Why? This is the idea. When Hashem does chesed for us and the Goyim recognize Hashem, ultimately, b'Yimos HaMashiach, they're going to say, wow, so Hashem is so great, because they will have a deeper recognition of what Hashem has done for us, because they know not only the attacks, but they also know of the planned attacks that were foiled as well. That's Rav Chaim's pshat and the word Dan Anochi, with the additional comments of the Rav. Okay. This paragraph ends, the pasuk ends, Ve'achreichen yetzu b'chush gadol. Hashem promises that when Bnei Israel leave Mitzrayim, they're going to have a ruchush gadol. They're going to leave with a lot of wealth, a lot of ruchush. So the Mepharshim discussed the following question. Why is Hashem emphasizing the physical, the Gashmi, as having a lot of wealth? The purpose of leaving Mitzrayim was to get the Torah, the ruchnius. When Hashem talks to Avram, why is he emphasizing, oh, and they'll have a lot of money when they leave? Why does that appear to be the emphasis of what Hashem is mentioning to Avram? So I found three pshatim for that. One pshat is more derech hadrush. The Alshich and others say ruchush gadol means ruchush ruchani. It doesn't mean a physical wealth. It means spiritual wealth. Hashem is saying to Avram, when the Jews leave Mitzrayim, they're going to leave very wealthy, very spiritual, seeing Hashem with the Shechina and Zekeli v'Anveyu, and they'll see the Shechina when they leave Mitzrayim. That's more derech hadrush, what ruchush gadol means. Other mepharshim say ruchush gadol means Hashem is going to give us ruchush gadol so that we'll be free to serve Hashem in a ruchnius level. You know, if a person is constantly worried about money, it's hard to be free to serve Hashem. It's hard to be free to go learn and daven and everything. A person whose financial issues are taken care of has more freedom to serve Hashem. So many mepharshim say that's the pshat of ruchush gadol. Hashem is going to take us out of Mitzrayim in order for us to serve Him with the Torah and ruchnius of Baruch Hashem. Say, listen, they'll have plenty of money, nothing to worry about, plenty of gashmius, and that'll be taken care of. That's the pshat of ruchush gadol. The Rav Zatzal gave a third approach, which goes as follows. We discussed earlier that there's an aspect of chayrus in the mitzvos of the Korban Pesach. So they experienced chayrus, and they had to be trained to be a free nation, because they've been slaves for so long. We discussed that the mitzvahs of the Korban Pesach, the laws of the Korban Pesach, were a training process in training us to feel free. So the Rav said as follows: slaves have no material possessions. Masha koneva konarava. Whatever you own, you own your master owns. It's his. You don't own anything. So, as we're leading Mitzrayim, we have to learn what it means to be free. Having lots of money is part of chayrus. So Hashem wanted to make sure Hashem gave us a lot of money when we left Mitzrayim, as part of the experience of becoming free and feeling like you're a free nation. Hashem wanted to educate us and train us to feel free to serve Him. And we're not slaves anymore. We had to get rid of the slave mentality. So just like the Sefer HaChinuch explains that the laws of the Korban Pesach helped train us to feel like we're free, a free aristocratic nation, so too being wealthy was part of that training as well. And that's why Hashem wanted us to have a lot of money. That was also part of this idea of chayrus, feeling free. Yeah.
According to Alshech, what about, you still have to say that they left us a lot of money now.
Yeah, so as I explained before, the Ashkenaz agrees that they received money when they left Mitzrayim, that they had money. But the point here is that when Hashem's speaking to Avram, He appears to be emphasizing, and they'll leave with the Chush Jadol. That's like the main thing Hashem's emphasizing. The question is, why is He emphasizing that? The answer is that if the Chush Jadol refers to the spiritual Chush, so then it makes sense that Hashem was emphasizing the Chush Jadol. That's the point of the Ashkenaz. That's why Hashem's emphasizing it. Yeah. Okay, next. So the next paragraph is Vihisha Amda. Vihisha Amda Rav Asinabu. How is Vihisha Amda connected with the previous paragraph? So Pashup Shat, this is what Rav Mefarshim say. Vihisha Amda, the word Vihi is feminine. Vihi refers to the Havtocha, the promise of the previous paragraph. The previous paragraph says, Baruch Shomer Havtochas Al Yisrael, Hashem keeps His promise. Vihi, and that promise that Hashem will always save us from Mitzrayim, save us from Golos, it's that promise that has kept us alive for so many generations and kept us going, that the Goyim have always tried to oppress us, and that promise that Hashem will help us and protect us is what has stood for us and helped us in all the time of our tzaras. That's how Rav Mefarshim explained the phrase Vehi Sha'amda. Vehi refers to the Haftacha from the previous paragraph. I found that the Arizal has a different pshat. The Arizal says that Vehi refers to the Shechina. Shechina is feminine. That the Shechina has stood with us to help us in Galus. It says here, in all the generations that the Goyim try to kill us and try to oppress us and try to destroy us, the Shechina stands with us and protects us. That's the idea of the Arizal. This fits into the basic message of Purim, that even when the Jews are in Chutz La'aretz and they don't see Hashem in an overt, obvious way, even in Chutz La'aretz, the Shechina still remains with us. The Medrash says that when the Jews went into Galus, the Shechina went with them into Galus. That's what the Medrash says. The Gemara says, Medrash says. So that's the pshat here. That as whenever we go into Galus, the Shechina stays with us, and the Shechina is what protects us. According to the Arizal, I'm not fully clear what the connection is between this paragraph and the previous one. I don't get it exactly, the exact connection. But that's what he says. He says Vehi refers not to the Haftacha, but Vehi refers to the Shechina itself. Okay. Now, this idea of Vehi Sha'amda is actually a major yesod in Torah Hashkafa, a major yesod. That it says here, Lo'echad b'vad amonu chaloseinu, the Goyim always try to destroy us. El b'chold over to amonu chaloseinu, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu matzilinu miyadam. Hashem always protects us. Hashem always saves us. This is a major yesod in Hashkafa. Am Yisrael survives. B'nei Yisrael always survives as a nation. It's a big yesod in Hashkafa that no matter the Goyim try to oppress us in different ways, sometimes they injure us, but ultimately we survive. This is the chinuch. The chinuch says that this is the pshat in the mitzvah of Gid HaNasha. Why do we have the mitzvah of Gid HaNasha? Because the malach of Esav, the malach, the Medrash says, was the Tsar of Esav. So the struggle of the malach and Yaakov was symbolic of the eternal struggle of Klal Yisrael and the Goyim. So the malach injured Yaakov, but he survived till the morning. So the chinuch says exactly, sometimes the Goyim will injure us, we're going to survive to Yimos HaMashiach. It's exactly this idea, that no matter what, we're going to survive as a nation. Rabbeinu Bachya refers to this idea, the famous, in the first parak of Shmos, Haban Yitzchak Malo. Paro tried to make plans to kill us and destroy us, and in the end we survived. Rabbeinu Bachya says exactly, just like in Mitzrayim, Paro tried to destroy us and we survived in the end. Hashem was with us. So too, Hashem is with us in all the generations, always keeping us and helping us survive and not letting us be destroyed. It's a major yesod in Hashkafa. Of all people, Mark Twain once had a very beautiful expression of this idea. I don't think that was his intention, but there's a famous essay by Mark Twain that expresses this idea very, very well. You know, the Greek culture is basically gone. I mean, you know, it's in history books. Roman culture, it's in history books. But the Jewish culture, we live our lives more or less the way our forefathers lived 2,000 years ago. We're still around. This is yours, by the way.
Okay, good. So let's just read what Mark Twain has to say here. It's a beautiful essay from 1899. If these statistics are right, the Jews constitute but 1% of the human race. It suggests a nebulous dim puff of stardust lost in the blaze of the Milky Way. Well, he's a good writer. A nebulous dim puff of stardust lost in the blaze of the Milky Way. Okay? So he says, properly the Jew ought hardly to be heard of, but he is heard of, has always been heard of. He is as prominent on the planet as any other people, and his commercial importance is extravagantly out of proportion to the smallness of his bulk. His contributions to the world's list of great names in literature, science, art, music, etc. He has made a marvelous fight in this world in all the ages, and has done it with his hands tied behind him. He could be in vain of himself and be excused for it. The Egyptian, the Babylonian, and the Persian rose, filled the planet with sound and splendor, then faded to dream stuff and passed away. The Greek and the Roman followed and made a vast noise, and they are gone. Other peoples have sprung up and held their torch high for a time, but it burned out, and they sit in twilight now or have vanished. The Jews saw them all, beat them all, and is now what he always was, exhibiting no decadence, no infirmities of age, no weakening of his parts, no slung of his energies, etc. All things are mortal but the Jew. All other forces pass, but he remains. What is the secret of his immortality? That's the question which Mark Twain ends his essay with. And the answer is, Hashem is. That's exactly what it says here in that Gadol. Hashem is the secret. You have talk of Hashem. That's the answer. He didn't know the answer. But that's the answer. It's a beautiful essay. This is the pshat in what Mark Twain said. It's our Gadol. The he sha'amda. No matter what to do, we're not going to be destroyed, and we keep on surviving. It's a beautiful idea. There's room in the back if you want to. Okay. Okay, good. That's the he sha'amda. Now, the he sha'amda, which, as we explained, is a hemshech of the Baruch Shom Afkas Olam Yisrael, the Hisha Amza leads into the Tsei Omad. Tsei Omad, Ma Bikesh Rabban Rabbi Lassos Yaakov Avinu. That Ravan wanted to destroy us, so the Hisha Amza, which talks about the fact that the Goyim in each generation are out to destroy us, try to destroy us. So that's Lavan. Lavan was one of the examples, one of the first. He tried to destroy us. So the Hisha Amda leads into the Tzei Omad that Lavan wanted to destroy us. That's what the Ritva says. The Ritva says that Tzei Omad is like a proof to what we just mentioned, the Goyim in each generation are trying to destroy us. The Ritva says here an interesting line of Maisa Avos Siman Labanin. There's a rule that the Ramban mentions in a few places in the Chumash that whatever the Avos go through in Brachos, it's like a simon to the future of what's going to happen in Jewish history in the future. So Ravan attacking us in Chumash Bereishis and Hashem helping us is a simon to the future. Myself, a simon Labanim, that's what will happen in the future. The Goyim will attack us and try to oppress us, and Hashem will ultimately save us like he saved Yaakov. So Tzei Omad is a direct flow. It's actually a proof, according to the Ritva, of the Hisha Amda. That's what always happens in history, and what Levin did to Yaakov was the first example, and it's a Maisa Avos Simon Labanim. The Mepharshim point out that the phrase in the Torah by Levin, it says Arami Oved Avi. Arami refers to Levin. Oved Avi. Oved Avi means he destroyed my father, destroyed Yaakov. Now, it's referring back to the past. It should have said Ebed. He tried to destroy. He destroyed. Obed is present tense. So the Mepharshim say exactly. Why is it present tense? Because it's a constant thing. It's not just Laban tried to do it back then. What Laban tried to do back then is a remez to the fact that the Goyim consistently tried to do this. That they don't just in the past, just not just Laban in the past did it, but it's a present, ever-present, continuous attempt to destroy us. That's why it's the language of Arami Obed Avi. So that's the idea of Tzei Omad. So Tzei Omad is the introduction to Arami Rovi Rovi. Now, just as a background, the next section of the Seder is where the Seder really discusses the story of Sippur Yetzias Mitzrayim. And the way the Haggadah is structured is, the Torah takes three psukim from Parshas Kisavo, three psukim, and the Haggadah darshins every word in those three psukim. Those three psukim are like a synopsis of the basic story, and the Baal Haggadah tells the story of Sibbutz Mitzrayim by taking each of those three psukim and darshining them line by line. Right, the three psukim are Dvarim Kof Vav Pasuk He through a four psukim. Sorry, through Pasuk Ches. Four psukim? Yeah, He through Ches. So, as we're about to learn this next section of the Haggadah, I think it would be a good idea to take a minute to read those four psukim, just get a sense of what the overall story is, and then we're going to go back and analyze line by line. But if you want to get a good handle on Magid, on this part of Magid, to learn those four psukim by themselves as a unit, okay, and then go back and see them word by word. That's the whole structure of the next section of Magid. We're darshaning Arami Rovi Rovi. That point about to get a handle on Magid, I heard from Hadar Margol in Shlita. He said it's a very good idea to learn those four psukim by themselves and then go back and analyze them word by word. Now, the basic structure of Arami Rovi Rovi, the next section of the Haggadah, where the Baal Haggadah takes a pasukin, takes a word in Devarim and darshins it. So we have a whole shiur on the idea how Tavetzik explained that, the Rav Zatzal explained that, the idea of Torah Shebaal Peh. Now we have a whole separate topic that Chazal wanted to tell the story Dafka to Torah Shebaal Peh, a word here, a drash here, that's a separate shiur. Okay, but Pshat is what the Malbim says. The Malbim says that the reason why the Baal Haggadah does this was because to tell the story from Shmos and by Erebo, it would be too long, tedious. It's so long. You'd be at the Seder for forever. You know, you'd be at the Seder forever. So therefore, the Malbim writes the reason why this is Pashup Shat. The reason why the Baal Haggadah took Arami Rovi Rovi was because just as a good way of getting the story out in a concise form, we use those psukim from Arami Rovi Rovi in Parshas Kisavo. So that's the basic structure of the next section of the Seder of Arami Rovi Rovi. Okay. Now, let's go step by step. So first, the Haggadah says that Arami Rovi Rovi, I'm sorry, where is it? I'm sorry, here. It says, Tzei Omad, Ma Bikesh Rovin Arami Lachos V'Yavka Vinu, Paro Lagazar El Al HaZacharim, V'Lovan Bikesh Lach HaResakol Shinam Arami Rovi Rovi. That Lavan Paro was gozer on only the males, the Zacharim, and Lavan wanted to destroy everything. Bikesh Lach HaResakol. And how does the Haggadah know that? That Lavan was in a sense worse. Lavan's intention was worse than Paro, from the phrase Arami Rovi Rovi. So the Malbim just points out, how did the Haggadah know this? How do you know that Lavan was worse than Paro? Because the word Oved means to destroy. You never find that specific term used by Paro. So the Malbim says, because the Torah uses that specific term, which is a very strong term of destruction, by Lavan, not by Paro, that's the remez that Lavan had worse intentions than Paro. That's what the Malbim says, is the Pashut Shad as to how the Haggadah knows that whoever wanted to destroy us even more than Paro did. Now this idea that Ravan Bikesh Lach HaResakol, what exactly does that mean? What exactly does that mean? So the Pashut Shad is that Ravan wanted to murder all of the Shvatim, the boys and the girls. Pashut Shad, he wanted to kill Yaakov, that's for sure. And Pashat, he wanted to kill Yaakov's kids and the boys and the girls too. That's what it sounds like. Paro wanted to go around the Zacharim, the men. And Lavan wanted the men and the women, everything. That's Pashat Shat. It's a striking idea. Those were his grandchildren, but still, that's the Pashat Shat. I asked Rav Benzal Shlita. I said, he said, yeah, that's the Pashat Shat, that he wanted to kill them. That's it. End of Yadus. I mean, you know, if the Imos, you know, whether Lavan wanted to kill his daughters, I don't know if he wanted to kill his daughters, but it doesn't matter. If Yaakov's dead and the Shvatim are dead, then they're dead and there's no more Yadus. So Pashat Shad is Lavan wanted to wipe out, just physically murder the Yaakov and the grandchildren. That's what the Haggadah is assuming. Okay, that's one pshat. But the Netziv doesn't like that pshat so much. The Nesiv thinks that's a little much to assume. The Nesiv thinks the pshat is Laban wanted to kill Yaakov. And then it says, the Nesiv says, Laban wanted to take his grandchildren back home and raise them as goyim, not to kill them. But once Yaakov's dead, and Laban becomes the father, in a sense, of the grandchildren, he raises them, he would have raised them as goyim. And in that sense, Laban wanted to wipe out Bnei Yisrael by... Laban wanted to wipe out Bnei Yisrael. That's a nice pshat of the Netziv. I saw the Chayodim has a pshat that the word la'akor in the Torah is used as a remez for Avodah Zarah. If you look in Vayikra, Perek Kaf Hei, Pasuk Mem Zayin, it's discussing, you see that the word la'akor is used in reference to Avodah Zarah. So the Chayodim learns that Laban was trying to spread, wanted to spread Avodah Zarah, spiritual I don't know what the word, he wanted to spread Avodah Zarah amongst Bnei Yisrael, and in that sense destroy them, that they wouldn't have retained their Jewishness. Okay. And finally, I went to the pshat here from my Rebbe, Rav Aaron Soloveitchik Zatzal. Beautiful pshat. He says also that when it says Bikesh Laban Lachor Es Hakol, it was a spiritual attack. It was a spiritual assimilation. He points out that after Laban and Yaakov made their agreement, that Laban's not going to hurt Yaakov, and they make their agreement between each other, well, with each other. So then it says that Laban suggests to Yaakov, let's make a shavua with Elokei Avraham and Elohei Nahor, let's make a Shavua. And how does Yaakov respond? By Shava Yaakov, Bepachad Aviv Yitzchak. No, Yaakov says a Shavua only with my God, Yaakov Hashem. The Lavan wanted to say, listen, your religion, my religion, we can work together, we can fit together, we don't have to be so different, you don't have to be so different from us, we're all the same, I also believe in a God, we can work together. And Laban was trying to angle his way to wipe out again the spiritual uniqueness of Bnei Yisrael. And that's the Pshat La'akor Es Hakol, spiritual assimilation. That the Jews shouldn't feel so different, don't be so different. I also believe in God, your religion, my religion, we can work together, different religions can work together. And Yaakov says, no, he makes a shvuah only in the name of Hashem. And Rav Aaron explains that, Rav Aaron explained this idea that, that this happened even after Yaakov was safe. Yaakov was physically safe. Laban wasn't going to kill him. And even after he was physically safe, Laban still was trying to get in a spiritual attack to bring about assimilation within Yaakov. And that's Pshat Bikesh Yaakov, Laban Lachor Es Hakol. Look in the Rambam. It's very striking. We discussed this, we discussed it in Shir. The Rambam quotes both Maskir, B'Nusim, Messiah, and B'Shvach, the physical and the spiritual. He quotes both. We discussed that. The physical is Avanim Hayinu, and the spiritual is Mikhil Ovdei Avodah Zarah. Then the Rambam quotes Arami Dovid Avi right after the physical one. I mean, right after the Maskir, B'Nusim, Messiah, and B'Shvach, on the physical side, he quotes B'Kei Shalav and Lachas Kol. Why? Rav Aaron explains that even when you're safe physically, you have to realize that there's also spiritual enemies as well sometimes. And Laban wanted to wipe out Yaakov on a spiritual sense, even after Yaakov felt comfortable physically. He wasn't going to kill him. He was safe physically. But still, you have to be careful on the spiritual angle as well. And that's Rav Aaron's pshat in Bikesh, Love and Bikesh, Lachor Es Hakol. Okay? There's a Malbim here. The Malbim points, Malbim tells an interesting story. He says, when he was a child, he asked his father, he said, what's the pshat that Paro just wanted to kill the Zecharim? What's the pshat that Paro wanted to kill the Zecharim? Excuse me. Yeah, meaning what? It sounds like what? Paro was not trying to kill everyone, only the Zecharim. And Lavan wanted to get rid of everyone. Yeah, but if Paro kills all the Zecharim, then obviously Judaism's going to die out. That was the kasha which the Malbim asked his father. It's a good kasha. If Paro would have been successful, Rachmana Litzlan, in killing every male Jew who was born, then eventually the men die out, all the boys are dead, there are no baby boys, that's it, no more Judaism. So he said, his father answered him, it's not true. Because we pass that if a guy has a baby with a Jewish woman, the baby's Jewish. So therefore, just wiping out the men, theoretically, Judaism could have continued through the women, because their children, if they survived, would have been Jewish. So Judaism could have theoretically continued. And the Malbim says, when he got older, he found the Medrash which says this. The Medrash says that Haman said, Paro, he was a shaita, he was stupid, because Paro just killed the men. But then Judaism could survive through the women. I want to kill everyone, the men and the women. So that Medrash, that Haman, is exactly the answer which the Malbim's father gave to him. That the Malbim posts in his Agada, that Paro just wanted to kill the men. Theoretically, Judaism could have continued. Theoretically, if could have continued through the women, because the children of the women would have been Jewish. Okay, that's an interesting story of the Malbim and his father. Next. Okay, Arami Rovi Rovi. So it says here, Arami Rovi Rovi, Vayered Mitzrayim HaBayog Hashem Yimtseimot. Ravan wanted to wipe out my father Yaakov, and Yaakov goes down to Mitzrayim. So Rashi and many Mepharshim say that there is really no connection between the first phrase and the second phrase. It's two different ideas. Ravan attacked, wanted to kill Yaakov, comma, and Yaakov wanted to go down to Mitzrayim. Okay, now that's how many Mepharshim on the Chumash run. However, I found the Ritva. The Ritva says that there's a connection here. The Ritva says that it's all part of the same theme. Hashem said to Avram, your descendants will be ger, Be'er Solhem, for 400 years. So Ravan attacking Yaakov and Yaakov going down to Mitzrayim were all part of that broad gerus. So it's not that one led to the other, but they're all part of the same gerus, the same decree of Hashem, and in that sense they're connected. That's the connection of the pasuk. Ravan and Ravi is one part of the gerus in Chutzot's 400 years. Be'er Mitzrayim is another part of the gerus of the 400 years. That's what Ritva says, that there is a connection between the first, the two pshatim in the pasuk. Okay, so let's begin. Vayered Mitzrayim. So now the Haggadah is going to explain every single phrase of these pesukim. Vayered Mitzrayim, Anos al piha Dibur. He was forced to go down by the Dibur of Hashem. So the pasuk pshat is that this refers to when Hashem said to Yaakov, Al tirah meridah Mitzrayim. Don't be afraid to go down to Mitzrayim. So obviously Hashem was saying to him, you're going down to Mitzrayim. Don't be afraid to go down to Mitzrayim. That's Pashup Shat. Hashem said to Yaakov, you have to go down to Mitzrayim. I mean, he said it in a roundabout way, but that's what Hashem said to Yaakov, Al tirah meridah Mitzrayim. That's the Pashup Shat. Yeah. However, I found the Master Vitri has a deeper angle on this phrase. Anos al piha Dibur doesn't refer to when Hashem spoke to Yaakov, in Beersheba, when he was already in Beersheba. Hadibur means the Dibur that Hashem told Avram 700 years ago. Ki ger yezach beretz olahem. Dibur means this was part of Hashem's plan, and Hashem had organized history that Yaakov would end up going down to Mitzrayim to fulfill part of his plan. So Anos al piha Dibur means that Dibur that Hashem told to Avram that you're going down to Mitzrayim, that's the Dibur that's being referred, that's the pshat of the Master Vitri, that's the Dibur here. That Yaakov was in a sense forced, because Hashem was working out world history in this way. Okay, that's pshat in Anus al piha Dibur. Next, Vayagor Hashem. Melamed, Vayarad Yaakov binu ishtakeh Hashem el lagur Hashem. Yaakov went down with the intention of being a visitor, a stranger. The Mepharshim point out this is a big yesod, that Yaakov was very concerned about assimilation. So Yaakov made sure his intention and his children's intention when they went down to Mitzrayim was to go as gerim, were strangers. We're not going there to be settled. We're going there estranged. That's what it means. Bayagar, the language of being a ger, being a stranger. To live there temporarily as a stranger, that's the pshat. That's what he was doing this to avoid assimilation. Now, it's interesting, just to finish this point, Shenemar, by Emuel Paro, when the brothers came to Paro, they said to Paro, Ragur ba'aretz banu, ki ein nira latzon asher la'avodecha. We came to live here because there's no food for our cattle up in Eretz Yisrael. Because up in Canaan, ki kaved harav Eretz Canaan. It's very striking. There's a famine in Canaan. The brothers are talking to Paro. Say, Paro, we came down because there's no grass for the animals to graze in Canaan. That's why they came down. Why did they come down? Why did they come down? Because the kids are starving. That's why they came down. Why did they, look at the Paro. Ein miru l'tzon asher la'avodecha. Very interesting. So basically explains, based on a Rashi, that Rashi points out that Yosef was nervous about assimilation as well. Yosef wanted to make sure that Bnei Israel did not mix in too much with the Mitzrayim. So Yosef advised his brothers, tell Paro you want to be shepherds. Because why? The Mitzrayim worshipped the cattle, and being a shepherd was Tavas Mitzrayim. That was the hate. Being a shepherd was the worst thing, because somehow they don't want you being a shepherd on the sheep. You're too close to the sheep. They don't want being a shepherd on the sheep. So if you're a shepherd, there's a much less chance of assimilation. That's what Rashi says. So Yosef told the brothers, tell them you want to be shepherds. So the rub adds on, yeah, when they spoke to Paro, they made it sound as if all they cared about was being shepherds, even before their children's, even before the famine for their food for their kids. That, in other words, to emphasize that point, they said, Paro, we are here, we came down for one reason, because we need to be shepherds. Our whole life is being shepherds. There's no grass in Eretz Yisrael in Canaan to graze from. That's why we're here. And they didn't want Paro to say, oh, maybe you don't have to be a shepherd, this and that. They said, listen, what they were implying was, the implication was, if we can't be shepherds, we're going to go back. We're here because of the shepherds. We're not here for anything else. That's why when the brothers speak to Paro, they mention only the Ein Maritzon Asher Labadecha. This was all part of the brothers trying to avoid, Yosef helping the brothers trying to avoid assimilation in Mitzrayim, which is again the Pshat of Vayagrasham. They were coming down as strangers to avoid assimilation. Okay, next. Bimsei Ma'at. So it says, K'mashin Emar, B'shivim Nefesh Yodov Asachim Mitzrayimah, we came down with only 70, and now we left with thousands and thousands of people. With thousands and thousands of people. Now, most Mefarshim say, based on the Medrash Sifri, that the same Ma'at, that phrase, goes together with the phrase later of Gadol and Atzum. It's two phrases later, Gadol and Atzum. Bimsei Ma'at means we came down only a few, a very small nation, only a few. And then we became a Gadol v'Atzum. Gadol means many, a huge, large nation. Atzum means strong and healthy. And it quotes the Pasuk, B'nei Yisrael paru v'yishu v'yiru v'yitzum b'mod ma'od. And the Mepharshim explain, the Yabar Benel and many other Mepharshim explain that the Pasuk is the remez for what? Having six kids at a time. How did we get so big? We had six kids at a time. And that's Gadol. And what's Pshat Atzum? Normally, if you have six kids at one time, normally what happens nowadays? They're sickly, they're weak. That's Atzum. That even though we had six kids at a time, they were healthy. That's a double miracle. A, having six kids at a time over and over again. And B, they're also very, very healthy. So Bimsei Ma'at and Gadol Atzum go together. We came down with only 70. We had six kids at a time, six healthy kids at a time. And we ended up with millions of people. We had a lot of people. It says there were 600,000 men from the age of 20 to 60. So, mistama, that means you can add roughly another 600,000 men from 0 to 20 and 60 and above, roughly the same amount. And the women. So we left the shrine with roughly 2.2, 2.5 million, 2.5 million people. We went down with 70 and came out four or five generations later with 2.5 million people. That's incredible. That's incredible.
There's a Sefer Aznaim LaTorah written by Rav Sarutzkin from Tells, and he quotes there Rav Blazer Gordon, a Rosh Yeshiva in Tells in Europe, who says the following vort. You know, this is a little hard to believe. You know, this you know, six kids at a time thing, whatever, it's a little hard to believe. Six kids at a time. So it says there that there was once a maskil. You know, in Europe in those days, you know, the Haskalah was very strong. And somebody was nudging Rav Blazer Gordon. Says, come on, Rabbi, six kids at a time, so many kids all the time. Come on, it doesn't make sense scientifically. It doesn't make sense. So Rav Blazer Gordon said, listen, you're a maskil. You're into secular knowledge, statistics. Let's do a little statistics work. And Rav Blazer Gordon told him as follows. If you look in the Chumash in Bamidbar describes the number of firstborn boys, age 1 month and above. It's roughly 22,000. That's what it says in Bamidbar. There were 22,000 for this section. You might want to have a calculator available. Okay, just in case. I guess it doesn't make sense to look at the tape recorder when you're saying that because, okay, whatever. 22,000, roughly firstborn, 1 month and above. Firstborn men. How many men were there 1 month and up in the Jewish people? Roughly, we discussed 1.2 million. That's what it comes out, just the basic numbers. We explain that. So it comes out then that for each firstborn boy, there were roughly 55, 60 men. Which means that the average mother in Mitzrayim gave birth to 60 kids in her normal giving birth cycle. That's what the numbers say. It is impossible to get around these numbers. That's what the numbers say. There were roughly 22,000 firstborn boys, 1 month and above, 1 month and above. And there were 600,000 men, 20 to 60. So how many men were there 1 month and above? Approximately 1.2 million. So per firstborn boy, there were roughly 55, 60 men. That's what it says. Those are the numbers in the Torah. There was no way to get around this. I once gave the shir in Beit Dagon. There's a woman shir there, and they went crazy. No, it can't be. We spent half our argument about this with the numbers. Think about it. Which means, how is it possible that women could have 60 kids at 60 children? What's the answer? Six kids at a time. If you have six kids at a time and they're healthy, it's possible that 55, 60 children. There's no other way around it. So Rav Blazer Gordon proved to this maskil that you know, if you look with statistics, you better trust the midrashim a little more. It's a startling idea. You know, the average woman in Mitzrayim had around 3,500 grandchildren. talk about names. Like remembering the names. That's what it comes out. That's what it comes out. And this also makes sense. The Mefarshim say, the Malvin says, and others say, now we understand more about Derech HaTeva, why Paro got so uptight and wanted to kill us. Again, Paro wanted to kill us either way. But Hava is pen your bed. Paro walks into Mitzrayim, walks into Goshen, knocks on the door, you know, and they take a census. You know, how many people live in this? You know, how many people in your family? So the great grandmother, oh my gosh, the great grandmother, 3,500 times 60. That's a lot. I don't know what the number is, but that's 35,000. Like 200,000 great-grandchildren. That's what the numbers say. That's incredible. We were like, you know, multiplying. We're going to overrun Mitzrayim. Again, they were Rishayim. But the Malbim says that the Bederach HaTeva pretext, which the Mitzrayim used to attack us, was the fact that we were getting so big so fast. Anyway, that's what it says, six kids at a time. Now, some of you might be thinking, just a minute, that's only the firstborn boys, B'chorim, but there were firstborn girls too. So if they're firstborn girls, doesn't that change the numbers? Well, the answer is, I was only counting the men. If you're going to count the firstborn girls,
which means some of there are 22,000 of them as well. Then you have to also count the women, which are another 1.2 million people. So the ratio will still be the same. The ratio of firstborn children to adults is roughly 55 to 60 at a time. This, if you're interested in this word, it's in the Yoznaim Torah at the beginning of Shmos and the beginning of Bamidbar. It's a startling idea that the numbers in the Torah itself, the numbers in the Torah themselves, point to this notion, to this incredible medrash, that the average woman had 6 kids at a time. The only way it's possible to imagine that the woman had 55 or 60 children in her normal giving birth cycle is if you assume what this medrash says. It's a very strong proof in the Chumash for this very interesting medrash. You got that? That's nice. That's there's nine more Torah. And just to finish the thought, that's the only way it's possible to go from 70. The only way it's possible to go from 70 to 2.5 million in four generations is if you have 60 at a time. It's impossible. That's the only way it's possible. We came down with 70. We left with 2.5 million. What happened? Four generations. It doesn't work. That's the only way that it works. Especially if you include the Rashi that during Malchus Choshech, 4/5 of the Jews died. That means there were 10 million. Now, how do you go from 70 to 10 million? It's impossible. 6 kids at a time, 60 kids, 3,500 grandchildren, you know, per woman, then you can picture, you can imagine this idea. The idea of Bechor, by the way, goes by the mother, not by the father. In other words, it's the Petzer Rechem. So for each firstborn child that came out of the mother's womb, 59 followed, roughly. That's what it comes out. Okay. It's a very nice idea from Abayzer Gordon. Next. Now, the next line in the Haggadah, there's two girsas in how to read it. The girsa that some Haggadahs have is Vayhi Sham Lugoy. That's the phrase that's being quoted. Is that what you have? Or you have Goy Gadol? You have Goy Gadol. Okay, I have Goy. Meaning, one girsa is that this is Vayhi Sham Lugoy, comma, just Lugoy, Malam HaShayim Tzionim Sham. And the next phrase is Gadol V'Yatsum. Okay? So that we already explained. Gadol means many, Atsum means strong. Fine. So we'll do with that. We'll go with this girsa first, the girsa of Goy. They became a Goy, a nation in Mitzrayim. Malam HaYisrael Mitzrayim Sham. So if the girsa is just Goy, well, what that means is, what that means is that they became a nation. They became a singular nation, a set apart nation in Mitzrayim. Mitzuyan means special, set apart, singular. We became a nation in Mitzrayim. The Ritva explains that Hashem worked it out that we lived in the same place. You know, we started out in Goshen. You know, naturally over time, you move to the suburbs, you move out, you move other places. No, Hashem worked it out. The Jews became a Goy, a unified nation, set apart in Mitzrayim. Mitzuyanim Sham, Ritva quotes the Medrash, we didn't change our malbush, we didn't change our language, we didn't change our names. That's what the word Goy means, Mitzuyanim. We were our own nation. So if you have the girsa of Ahisham with Goy, that's what it means. We became a singular, set-apart nation in Mitzrayim. And then Gadol V'Atzum, as we already explained, many and strong. Many and strong. However, some of you have the girsa of Ahisham with Goy Gadol. Now, if it's Vahisham Lagoy Gadol, Milam Eshayim Yishom Mitzionim Sham, the word Gadol, according to your Girsa, doesn't mean what? Doesn't mean what? Does not mean what? Many. Because the pasuk, the idea that's quoted, what's the idea that's quoted? Mitzionim Sham. But they were special there. That's the special isn't the same as many. As according to my Girsa, Gadol Atsum means many and strong. That's the next sentence. And Goy means a set-apart singular nation. Singular nation. But according to your Girsa, where it says, Vayhi Sham L'Goy Gadol, that's the phrase that's being described in the Haggadah. Melam Eshayim Yisrael Mitzuyanim Sham, what does Gadol mean? So the Mepharshim say the word Gadol, according to that approach, means a great nation, an important nation, a distinguished nation. That in Mitzrayim, we were Chashuv, we were a great nation. That we were a distinguished nation. The Ritva here gives two pshatim, one physical and one spiritual. The physical pshat, the Ritva says, that the Jews in Mitzrayim were very healthy, and we were tall. You know, to be healthy enough to have six kids at a time, we were special. That's one pshat the Ritva gives. The Jews in Mitzrayim were a very special nation, very distinguished in our physical appearance, in our health. And that's the pshat of Mitzrayim Sham. Hashem did a nes, made sure that we were healthy, strong, a healthy, strong nation. Okay. Or the Ritva says, it doesn't mean distinguished in a physical sense, it means in a spiritual sense. The Ritva says that the Jews had good midos, the Jews weren't involved in arayos, the Jews were a very special nation spiritually as well. Melamecha Yisrael, Mitzuyanim Sham. That's what the, one second. Yeah, that's what the Ritva says. And the Aruch HaShulchan says this as well. We'll get to the Aruch HaShulchan a little bit later. He says this as well. That if it says Goy Gadol, that means we were a great, distinguished nation spiritually in Mitzrayim. That's what Mitzrayim means. Okay? So there are two approaches to that phrase. Does Mitzrayim mean set apart, singular, like we were our own nation, with our, you know, living in the same place, you know, our own names, our own way of dress? That's one approach. Or we were a great distinguished nation in our physical appearance or in our spiritual values. And that those two approaches depend on whether you have the Girsa Lagoy or Lagoy Gadol. Okay, Gadol on the tomb, we learned already, that we already discussed. This is the idea of having so many kids at a time who are also very healthy. So my Girsa is Gadol on the tomb, which means many and powerful. And your Girsa is just Atzum, that we were a strong, powerful nation, so many kids at a time, and a strong, powerful nation, that it says by Atzum b'mod ma'od, that we were a strong nation. Okay, those are the two approaches to those to that set of phrases from the pasuk. Next, then it says Varov. K'mashenemar. Rivava kitzamach asarim nasaticho. What do you have for varav? What English word? Numerous. Okay, yeah, varav literally means numerous. But the Mefarshim say that, you know, if you have the girsa of gadol v'yatsum, the numerous is already mentioned, right? According to my girsa, gadol is already mentioned. Numerous is already mentioned. So what does varav mean then? It has to mean more than that. And they quote here the language, rivava kitzamach asarim nasaticho. You... What word do you have for Rebaba? That's the word again. Okay. You were numerous like the grass in the Sada. What does that mean? So the Ritva says, Mamash, two very good pshatim. Two very good pshatim, the Ritva says, that the comparison of not just the number of people that you had, but that the way you grew and the way you were numerous is described here by the word Verub. He says as follows. It says you're like the grass. So number one, he says, when you cut grass, it always grows back. Very nice idea. Meaning what? Meaning the more the Mitzrayim oppressed us, we grew more and more. That's the connection here. The way we grew is like the grass grows. You cut the grass, it grows back. You kill the Jews, they come back. You oppress the Jews, they come back with even greater strength. That's one nice shot. Or the Ritva says, another idea, how does grass grow? Grass grows by itself, basically. Grass grows by itself. So the Ritva says that Hashem did a nes, that the Bnei Yisrael's children basically raised themselves. I guess they had to, 60 kids in the family. Kedeli me'aleihem. That they raised themselves, that Hashem did a nes, that he made it, he says here, Kedeli me'aleihem kesadeh below shum tsar v'amel. We didn't have to put so much effort, you know. Can you imagine? I don't know how it worked, you know, with chavis, you know, with laundry and whatever. You know, you can imagine the difficulty. Hashem somehow did some sort of nace. He made it much easier for the families to raise their children, and that's the connection of semach hasadah. Grass grows by itself. Children, as we'll see later, children are called amo. You have to work to raise children. That we'll get to later in the Haggadah. But here, the grass grew by itself in a sense. And that's what the word Varav means. Not numerous, but how they grew. Those are the two pshatim of the Ritva. Then the pasuk continues, Vatirbi, Vatigdili, Vatavoi Ba'adi Adoy Adiyim. And they became numerous and they grew up and you came. What's Ba'adi Adiyim? What do you have for Ba'adi Adiyim? In English, what do you have for that? In groups? Such a hard way, you don't even know what you have. Charming, right, oh, right, oh, right, Ba'adi Adiyim, right, right, oh, good. So Ba'adi Adiyim means like beautiful. I guess you have the word charming, beautiful. Charming and beautiful. The idea is as follows. There's a medrash. The Gemara in Sota. The Gemara in Sota says that the Mitzrayim would, the women would give birth under the trees in the field. The Mitzrayim would come to find them and to kill them, and somehow, miraculously, they would hide in the ground, and the Mitzrayim would couldn't find them. And then after the Mitzrayim would leave, they'd in a sense grow out of the ground and grow up and in a sense raise themselves in the fields, the children, and they'd come home looking beautiful in large groups, as the children would come home. Adiyadi means beautiful. They came back from the fields. The children that were born in the fields came home already looking charming and beautiful, meaning, you know, they were they had grown already. And the Medrash, the Gemara also has a pshat. Adayim is like groups, like Adarim, groups. That they came home in groups to their parents at home, you know, healthy, you know, well-grown children who came back from the field, as opposed to being killed by the Mitzrim. Hashem did this miracle and they hid in the ground somehow. And they came home, like, you know, grown up, beautiful, in groups. That's how Chazal interpret the phrase Adei Adayim. Okay. Then the pasuk continues. It says Va'at Eirom Be'aryah, and you are and you were unclothed. You're naked. So Chazal interpret that to mean that means you were naked for mitzvos. They were lacking mitzvos. Meaning that Bnei Yisrael were in Mitzrayim, and they didn't have enough zechuyos to leave. They didn't have any mitzvos. So Hashem said, listen, Bnei Yisrael needs mitzvos, zechuyos. I'll give him two mitzvos. Bris Milah and Korban Pesach. And that's the next pasuk which is quoted, where it refers to Lomach B'damayeh Chayi, with the blood you shall live, twice. One refers to Korban Pesach, one refers to the blood of what? Blood of Bris Milah. So that's how these psukim flow. That Hashem, that we were growing and doing so well, and Hashem was doing, it was great for us, but we didn't have any mitzvos. We were lacking mitzvos. We didn't have the tzchuyos to leave. Hashem gave us, the mitzvah of Karim Pesach and the mitzvah of Bris Milah, and that's the pasuk which is quoted. That's the pasuk which is quoted next. Now it's very interesting. You should know, the pasuk which is quoted next really comes before the pasuk that was quoted first. It's out of order, right? If you look in Yechezkel, the pasuk which ends At Eirom Ve'aryah comes after the pasuk of Right? Is that correct? Right? That's correct, right? What are the psukim? What are the exact psukim? Right. The first pasuk, Revava Kitzemach Asada, is Yecheskel Tez Zayin Pasuk Zayin. And the next pasuk is Yecheskel Tez Zayin Pasuk Vav. So the Haggadah quotes it here because, you know, as far as Yetzias Mitzrayim went, right, as far as Yetzias Mitzrayim went, the pasuk Vav is a remez to the mitzvos which allowed us to leave, and we weren't a room anymore for mitzvos. But the Ariza doesn't have this pasuk. The Ariza has this pasuk. The Ariza has this girsa. Others don't. You have the girsa in yours? You have the pasuk? Why not? Because it's out of order. It's the wrong. It doesn't fit. Right? What does he say? So one reason why some don't have this girsa is because it's out of order. Two, this idea is a nice idea that the schus of the Karim Pesach and the Bris Milah is what got us out of Mitzrayim. Yeah, but that's a nice idea, but that's not the theme of this Pesach. The theme of this Pesach is that we're discussing how great the number of Bnei Yisrael were and how we grew. So that's why Rav David Feinstein tweets a quote in the Kol Dolchei Haggadah that some aren't going with this Pesach at all. For those two reasons, they don't have this Pesach. It's a nice idea. And that's why the Arizal had the Girsa. But some don't have that Girsa for the reasons that we mentioned. Either it's out of order. It's a little strange the Pasuk that the Haggadah has it out of order. And two, the theme of this Pasuk doesn't flow with the theme being described under the word Berav. Okay. So that's the end of the first. So we just finished darshaning the first pasuk. Harami rovi rovi vayered mitzrayim v'yergasham imseim ma'ad vayishem goy gadol atzum v'rav. We finished darshaning that first pasuk of the Harami rovi rovi. Okay, we'll begin the next pasuk now, and the next pasuk goes vayered mitzrayim ha'mitzrim vayanunu vaytnu leinu avodah kasha. The mitzrayim treated us badly. They did bad things to us. They oppressed us and gave us a lot of difficult work. So now the Haggadah goes and explains each one of these. Now, Vayeresenu HaMitzrim, K'ma Shenemar, Havan Yitzchak Malo. The Mitzrim acted evil. What do you have for that? Acted evilly? No. Vayeresenu. Right, they did evil to us, and they quote the Pasuk, Havan Yitzchak Malo. Havan Yitzchak Malo is the beginning of the oppression. There's a famous Ramban there. The Ramban describes the progression of the Shibud of Klai Yisrael. First, Paro did a small dose of oppression. Then it got more and more. We'll discuss it this morning, a few minutes, step by step by step, until it got worse and worse and worse. Okay, Havan Yitzchakma, the Rabban explains the word Yitzchakma means Paro was being very tricky. He was trying to oppress Klai Yisrael in a way that they wouldn't know it's coming, they wouldn't realize. He would do it in a sneaky way, in a tricky way. That's what the phrase the Ramban says on Chumash Nitzchakma means. Now, the Pasha Pshat of Vayareu Osanu HaMitzrim, the Pasha Pshat is, as you said in English, they did evil to us. Okay, they did bad things to us. However, the Mefarshim points out that the word Osanu Al Pidiktuk doesn't fit so well with that Pshat. If you wanted to say in Hebrew, they did evil to us, what should it have said? Vayareu, what? Vayareu? Lanu. Vayareu lanu hamitzrim. The word osanu is an interesting word. Osanu sounds like it means something else. Again, the pshat is they did evil to us. But the Mefarshim say, Vayareu osanu means they made us evil. They made us bad. Not they did evil to us. Vayareu osanu, that we are the direct, we are the object, they made us evil. And the Mefarshim give a pshatim here. I'll just mention a few. The first pshat that I heard this from a Rebbe Rav Shechter Shchita, and also Rav Dovid Feinstein has it in his, Shchita has it in his Haggadah as well, that they dehumanized us. They made us evil. The Mitzrim, when the Goyim try to oppress us, so the first step of the oppression is they dehumanize the Jewish people and convince the world that we're like animals. And once you're convinced, once we're not human, so we do whatever you want to us. That's exactly what the Nazis did in Germany. The Nazis, Yimach Shemam, they, with all their propaganda, they convinced the average German, these Jews are lowlifes and parasites and this. And once they were convinced, then they came and attacked us. And that's what's happening in Mitzrayim. The Mitzrayim made us evil, as if we are an evil nation. And that was part of the oppression. Once the Mitzrayim thought we were evil, then they came and they would attack us and they would oppress us in a tremendous way. This idea, by the way, is very meduyuk in the Ramban. The Ramban that I mentioned before, Havan Yitzchakma, the Ramban says as follows. The Ramban says, at the first step of the oppression, Paro did not want to murder us outright. That's why in the beginning, what did he do in the beginning? He made us into slaves. He made us build cities for him. Paro figured that if you're working hard, you'll be weak. You'll weaken the nation. He didn't murder us outright. And then eventually, what happened eventually? Paro says, go throw the babies into the river. Okay? The Ramban explains that when Paro originally didn't want to murder us, he had several reasons in mind. One, Paro had in mind what the Goyim were going to say. That's what it says. The other nations, you know, a Jewish nation, a nation is under your control. They're a nice nation. Suddenly you go and you start oppressing them and try to kill them. So Paro was concerned about what other nations would say. That's what the Ramban says. Okay. Then he also says, the Ramban also says, that Paro knew
the people wouldn't let him do it. Begida gadola. The people, that means it's, it would have been a terrible, what's a begida? Not a rebellion. A begida is, traitorous act, that's the word. It would have been a traitorous, treacherous act. And the Ramban says that the people wouldn't have allowed it. Paro understood the people wouldn't have allowed it, and that's why Paro didn't come out and murder us right away. Okay, that's what Ramban says. Then the Sheba progressed one level, a second level, and then eventually Paro decreed go throw the Jewish babies into the river. Well, you read the Ramban, it's Ramban in Shmos, Perek Aleph. Well, what happened? But what about the people? I thought Paro was afraid the people wouldn't have allowed it to happen. The answer is that over the course of months of oppressing the Jews and treating them as slaves, the Jews became dehumanized in the Mitzrayim's minds. This is Mamash Pshat in the Ramban. So the same Paro who was, and the same Mitzrayim, that Paro was afraid they wouldn't have allowed him to kill the Jews originally, a few months later, after a while of this oppression, of the propaganda, they were happy to kill the Jews. It's not what happened in Germany. The Nazis' propaganda was enough. Eventually, they got all the Germans to think we were lowlives, to murder us. So this idea, they made us evil. They made us out to be evil. They dehumanized us, which is a very nice pshat that I heard from my Rebbeim here, is also mamish the pshat. It's mamish the pshat in the Ramban. You have to read the Ramban. Paro was afraid. The people won't let him kill the Jews outright. And then 10 lines later, that's what he did. And they did kill the Jews outright. What happened? What happened was, in the course of those few months, we had become dehumanized, and in the eyes of the midstream, and they felt able to murder us. You got that shot in the Ramban? That's right. Okay, good. That's the shot in the Ramban. Well, there's Rav Alkabetz, the writer of the Lucha Dodi, he works with this Duke of Osanu with a slightly different angle. Vayere Osanu, until now we've been saying they dehumanized us. They made us out to be evil. They dehumanized us. He says no. They caused us to become evil by assimilation, and that way we were prone to attack. Vayere Osanu means the Mitzrim caused us to become assimilated. We became evil. Mamash, we became evil. We became assimilated Jews. We're shy. We didn't keep the mitzvahs anymore. Oh, and that's part of the Sheba, that once we become assimilated, then they're able to attack us. We find a similar idea by Purim, that some Mefarshim say that was the idea behind Achashverosh's party, that Achashverosh had his party, which and there was a Yayin Nesach there, and the whole theme and the party was decadent and everything, and Achashverosh wanted the Jews to violate Averos so that they'd be susceptible to attack. There's a Medrash, and the Gemara quotes it, that Achashverosh was very nervous that Hashem would help the Jewish people, and that's why Haman said to Achashverosh, Yeshno Am Echad Mufuzar Mufarad. Yeshno means literally there is a nation. But the Gemara says Yeshno means Yashen. They are sleeping from mitzvos. Meaning, don't worry, Achashverosh, don't worry. They're not being so careful in mitzvos. You can attack them. So we see this idea that the Goyim were concerned about that, and the Goyim wanted us to violate Averos, become a silver, so that they could oppress us. So what we find in the Gemara and the Midrashim about Purim, Rav Shlomo Alkabetz says, is hinted at in this phrase, Vayere Osanu. They made us evil so that we would become susceptible to attack. Those are several pshatim in the phrase Vayere Osanu versus, as opposed to Vayere Lanu. Okay. And one final pshat in the idea of Vayere Osanu is in the Haggadah of the Aruch HaShulchan. And his pshat goes as follows. The Aruch HaShulchan has the girsa we discussed earlier by the phrase Vayihi Sham L'goy. There are two versions. Some have a version Vayihi Sham L'goy,
That's it. Some have by Hisham Lugoy Gadol. So he has the Girsa by Hisham Lugoy Gadol. We discussed then that by Hisham Lugoy Gadol means they were special, they were a distinguished nation, they were a great distinguished nation. The Aruch Shulchan interprets that to mean they had Milos Gadolos, they had many qualities, and it means that we became a very distinguished, very high level Ruchnius nation in Mitzrayim, by Hisham Lugoy Gadol. Then it says, Atsum. Atsum, he interprets to mean many. There was many people. And the Pasuk says, Uvneso paru vayishritsu vayibu, etc. The Russian vayishritsu, he points out, that implies we were multiplying. Yishritsu means us to have many, many multiplying. So the Aruch HaShulchan understands that phrase to mean that the Haggadah is saying that there were many, many of us. We're being praised. The Torah is describing how many of us there were. There were many, many Jews, but the level, the Ruchnius level, had gone down already. The Ruchnius level had gone down. In other words, since the Torah's emphasis is on that we were so fruitful and we multiplied so much, so here the Torah is hinting, now we're just being fruitful and multiplying. Originally, we were praised for being a great nation, lots of high ruchnius. But now we're on the way down already. This is how the Aruch HaShulchan warns. Now, atzum means there are many of us, but that's all. That's the mila. The mila was many, but it doesn't mean. But we had lost that added quality of goy gadol. So the Aruch HaShulchan understands that atzum, the pasuk quoted by atzum, is in a sense a move downwards away from goy gadol. And then he says, by Reis Sarah HaMitzrim, once we had already gone down a little, once we had left the Derech HaTorah, then the Umos HaOlam, the Goyim, can find Chisronos and make us evil. In other words, he's explaining the progression. It's the same idea, again, Osanu means they made us evil. They treated us poorly. They treated us poorly. They made us evil, and they were convinced how bad we were, and therefore they treated us in a negative way. Right? And as Bayer Yosef, they made us out to be evil. But when do the Goyim make the Jews out to be evil? When the Jews themselves begin to serve Hashem less well. When the Jews are serving Hashem well, the Goyim are impressed. He quotes the Pasuk, V'ra'u kol am ha'aretz, kishem Hashem nikra aleinu. When the Jews live in upright, moral, Torahic lives, so the Goyim say, oh, Jewish people, they're chashuv, they're special, and they look up to us. When we, on our own, start going downwards, when we stop living lives like that, when you can't see Shem Hashem Nikra Aleinu, then the Goyim begin saying, oh, Vayireu Asanu, that the Jews are bad, and they find Chisronos in the Jews, and then that's their pretext for more anti-Semitism. By Arayogano. So there's an important lesson here that the way the Aruch Shulchan reads the Hemshech of Sukkim is we have to learn a lesson here that when we act properly, the Goyim are going to respect us. When we stop acting properly, when we have our own inner weakness in our Avodas Hashem, that causes the Goyim to further view us negatively and therefore further attack us. The Chiddush of the Aruch HaShulchan, this is his Chiddush, is that he interprets L'goy Gadol is very positive, that's the Pashup Shat. He interprets Atzum, although Atzum is a positive thing in a sense, that there were many, many Jews, he interprets Atzum being, that's all that was positive, just a lot of us. But on the Ruchnius level, on the spiritual level, we'd already been going down. So his Chiddush is, that when the Haggadah quotes Uvnei Yisrael Paru Vayishritsu, etc., the emphasis on the physical multiplying implies Ruchnius is going down, and therefore that leads into Vayireu Asanu. When we go down on our own, then we're more susceptible to the Goyim finding fault in us, and leading to more anti-Semitism. That's the very, very interesting approach of the Aruch HaShulchan to this to the Hemshech, to the flow of the Limudim here in this section. Okay? Those are the Pshatim of Yireyahu Osan. Okay, next. Haggadah continues, and it describes the progression of the oppression against Chai Yisrael. It begins with Vayireyu Osanu HaMitzrim. That was step one. That's Hava Nischak Malo. Then Haggadah continues. Vayye'anunu. Vayye'anunu means, and they oppressed us. And it quotes the Pasuk that there were Sarei Misim, Laman Nasobisiv Osan. Then it says, they gave us very difficult hard labor, and it quotes Pasuk by Vidu Mitzrayim Espinei Yisrael B'farach. So the flow of the Haggadah here fits very, very well according to the Ramban. The Ramban that I mentioned before, Hava Nischak Malo, he describes the progression, the step-by-step progression of the Shibud. First, Hava Nischak Malo. And then Paro said, okay, we're going to have Sarei Misim, Laman Anoso. The Ramban interprets that to mean that there was a work tax on Klai Yisrael, that every man had to go do some work for the king and build these cities for the king. The goal was to weaken the Jewish people, to weaken them physically, and then to weaken them in general. And then that wasn't enough. That didn't work. So the next step of the Shibud was So the Ramban explains that in this pasuk, Vayviru Mitzrayim Espinei Yisrael Befarach, we see a chiddush. This is a new level of the oppression. He says, up until now, Paro had enslaved us. What does it mean, Paro had enslaved us? That Paro's had his men take the Jews for this work tax, and we were slaves to Paro. Every Jew had to go and put in some time to once, I don't know, X percent of the year to work for Paro. But the next level was Vayavidu Mitzrayim, that the Egyptians, not just Paro, not Sarei Misim, that we are working under the ministers of Paro who are having us work for Paro. It's now Mitzrayim is making us work hard, meaning all the Egyptians, Egypt as a whole, the average Egyptian was given the authority to take the Jews and make them their personal slaves. That's what the Ramban says. The Ramban says, Gazru Ya'avidu kol Mitzrayim es ha'am, v'chol ish Mitzri, every particular Egyptian, she'istarech b'avodah, who needed work, yimshol, would rule over us, l'kachas ne'amanashim, yashu l'avodaso, we became like the slaves of the Mitzrim. That's the pshat Ya'avidu Mitzrayim, es b'nei Yisrael b'farach. That's the pasuk being quoted here. This is another level of the Shibud, but that's the progression. That first we worked for under Paro. We built Paro cities. Okay, so we had to put some time in. The Ramban interprets that to mean a tax. He says, Chalifot Chodesh O Yoser. We had to work for a month out of the year, a few months out of the year. But then it got worse. It got worse that the average Mitzri was given the authority to make us their personal slaves. So it comes out, according to the Ramban, that we were enslaved by all the Mitzrim. The average Mitzri household was part of the oppression. That's what comes out according to the Ramban. It's not that Paro was oppressing us only. The average Mitzri household was also oppressing us. This will become significant later when we get to a discussion of the Makos. Rav Salavitch says how the Rav has an interesting idea regarding Makos Bechoros, which I think fits very well with this Ramban. That, it wasn't we were just slaves to Paro. We were slaves to the average Mitzri household. The average Egyptian household took the Jews as their personal slaves and oppressed them. Okay, that's the second pasuk of the Psukim of Rami Ravi Ravi that the Haggadah has darshaned. Okay, we'll move on now to the third pasuk that begins with Banitzak El Hashem. Okay. So this pasuk reads, "Vanitzak el Hashem." We cried out to Hashem. "Vayishma Hashem." Hashem heard our cries. "Vayares anyenu esamalenu v'esachatzenu." Okay. So as in this entire section, the Baal HaGadah explains this pasuk phrase by phrase. So let's begin. Vanitzaka Hashem Elkei Avoseinu. Kama Shenemar, Vahi Bayamim Rabim Ahayim, Bayamas Melech Mitzrayim, Vayanchu Bnei Yisrael Min Avoda, Vayizachu.
That the first king died, and Bnei Yisrael, Vayanchu means we were groaned, we were sighing, we were groaning from the Avoda, and we cried out to Hashem. So the pasuk sounds like it was only after the first king died that the shibud got so difficult that we cried out to Hashem. So the pashup shot is that somehow the shibud of the new king was more oppressive. That's the pashup shot. That somehow the shibud of the new king was more oppressive, and that's why after the first king died, that's when we cried out to Hashem. Because of the new intensity of the shibud, that's the pshat that's a chor the pashut pshat of the pasuk. However, there are other pshatim as well. Rashi in the Chumash quotes one pshat of Chazal that when it says Vayamas Melech Mitzrayim, it doesn't mean literally that the king died. It means the king got saras nitzareya. The king got saras. The Gemara says that when you get saras, it's something like leprosy. When you get that, it's considered like you're dead. And therefore, that's the pshat vayamas. And then when he had this disease of saras, he would kill the Jewish babies and he would use their blood, like somehow bathing in blood somehow helped solve some of the symptoms of saras. So that's the pshat of the pasuk. Not that there was a new king who had a more oppressive slavery, shibud. But rather, it was the same king, but he made the shibud much, much worse, and he began, killing Jewish babies left and right, and we cried out to Hashem. I found, though, there's another pshat that the Ritva says in the Ritva's Haggadah, which is that the word avoda, min ha-avoda, is a remez to Avodah Zarah. Min ha-avoda is a remez to Avodah Zarah. That the new king, when the new king came to power, he began to force us to worship Avodah Zarah. And that's when it got very oppressive. That's when we cried out to Hashem. Hashem, we can't handle this. The worship, physical oppression was one thing, but spiritual oppression, worshiping Avodah Zarah, we can't handle it. That's the pshat. When it says, Vayanchu b'nei Yisrael min ha-avoda, so the Ritva says, Hamelech HaChadosh gozer aleihem gzeros, v'hichricham la'avod avodat kochavim. He forced us to worship Avodah Zarah, and that's when we cried out to Hashem. So those are the three pshatim as to why Bnei Yisrael cried out to Hashem after the king died. The first pshat is the simple pshat that the second king had a heavier oppression, was when he was more oppressive. The second pshat is that the original king didn't die, but rather he got saras, and he began killing Jewish babies to get their blood. And that was obviously very, very oppressive, much more difficult. Or the third pshat, it's referring to a spiritual oppression, that the word avoda refers to avodah zarah as opposed to physical avoda. Okay, that's the pashup pshat of Vayinitzakel Hashem.